So Jim is going to be talking to us about Uganda Concern, but also going to be preaching on Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 to 9. So I'm going to read that to us now. So this is about Joshua being installed as leader. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan into the land I'm about to give to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Jim. So welcome again to Jim. And pray again a blessing upon you, Jim. Thank you for the person that you are. And thank you for being here. And just pray that God will speak mightily through you. Amen.
Thank you. Good morning. So some of you may not know me, but I'm Jim. I'm pastor at the Gospel Mission down in Tanner Street, where you met my hairy brother last week, didn't you, Dave? We joke that we are brothers. He is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. And I've known Dave for many, many years, and we get up to lots of stuff together. He's a very, very great friend. So I've got several hats, really. So, my day job is I work for the NHS. So as you can imagine with coronavirus, or COVID-19 as we like to call it quite a lot of the time, it's been very busy this last week or so, particularly. So with my other hat, of course, I'm pastor of the Gospel Mission, but with another hat, I'm an ambassador for Uganda Concern UK. So this morning I'm going to try and weave two things. I'm going to try and weave the sermon around be strong and courageous, or courageous, as quite often our Ugandan friends say, but also to introduce you to some of the work of Uganda Concern. And I've got some friends with me, Bridget and Steve. Bridget and Steve are trustees of Uganda Concern UK, and it's all their fault that I got involved, because for a number of years they've been going backwards and forwards to Uganda, and they've been going, "Jim, come, Jim, come, Jim, come." And I'm thinking, I really, really want to, but there's always been a good reason or a good sort of situation going on where I haven't been able to go. But in harvest service of October, it was actually September 2018, we had a Ugandan harvest service. We spoke about what the harvest would be like in Uganda. And Bridget came to me after the service and said, "You can go next year." And it wasn't a question, it was a statement. You can go next year. And I had no reason not to go. So I said, absolutely. And so that's how it happened. So in January 2019, off we went to Uganda. And I had two verses running around in my head. And strangely enough, one of the verses was this Joshua 1, verse 9, which incidentally played a big part in the week or 2 weeks or so that I was there in Uganda. And I'll come back to that. But another verse that really was on my heart was from the book of Isaiah 43, verse 19. It says, "Do you not see I am doing a new thing? Can you not see what's going on?" And it was a real challenge to me that God was trying to open my eyes to see what is going on in the world, but also what's going on in me and what's going on in Faversham and what's going on with Christians everywhere. And that God wants to do a new thing, and he wants to move us into a new place with him. That we're able to understand his word more, that we're able to be more proactive, not sort of hiding our faith, but more challenging perhaps to people that we meet to talk about how much God loves us. Right now, we're in a situation where the world seems to be in panic. We've had a number of deaths through coronavirus in this country. In Italy, they've had a number more. In China, they've had a lots more. And all over the world right now, people are nervous, anxious, and fearful. And the Bible is very clear to us as Christians that we don't need to be nervous, anxious, or fearful. Amen? And in fact, that we should be strong and courageous. And it's no better time to be strong and courageous. So I'm going to introduce some pictures to you and a couple of videos from the time in Uganda, but also just explain some of the things that go on behind that, but also for us to think in particular of the last little couple of verses from Joshua 1, verses 1 to 9. So this last bit here is verse 9. It says, "Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be terrified." Do not be terrified. Now, the whole passage from Joshua 1 ties in exactly with the new thing. Can you not see I'm doing a new thing? And with the challenge that we have as Christians not to be anxious or fearful or worried or terrified about anything, but in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God concerning us. And that's a challenge to us, each one, isn't it? And we should be praying for our brothers and sisters throughout the world and encouraged to pray for them as well. There are people today that are afraid to come to church. There are people today that are afraid to worship for fear of catching this disease. You know, and the Bible is very clear about what we can and can't do. And the fact is, he says, don't give up meeting together. Don't give up meeting together. And this is a real challenge to us. And I believe that as we are meeting together, we're faithful to God. And he will uphold us. He will sustain us. And he will carry us through all these situations. But be a good witness. Be a good witness. I've always been a lover of motorbikes. I've had several motorbikes in my life. And one of the things that Steve said to me when we got to Uganda, he said, you'll enjoy the motorbikes. You'll enjoy seeing them. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of motorbikes. But you don't often see a motorbike stacked like that going through Faversham Deer. That's a sort of, I would say that's a medium load. Because I saw some strange things. Steve said to me, look for a coffin. And it took me 2 weeks till I actually saw a motorbike come past me with a coffin on the back. I don't know if there was a body in it, but there was a coffin on the back of the bike. Chicken shed, a complete chicken shed with chickens. That went past. But this one here, that is not an isolation suit. There is someone there carrying some water bins. But, you know, they are very, very colourful people. Lively, they're full of life in Uganda, but Uganda is a country which, like so many African states and African countries, is really hit with poverty, is hit with various illnesses. We're talking about coronavirus, but they for many years have struggled with AIDS and Ebola, and also the effects of war. So there's lots and lots of poverty throughout Uganda. Now, we've spoke about Uganda Concern UK. Well, Uganda Concern UK is really set up to support Uganda Women's Concern. Now, this was set up by this lovely lady with the purple top here. That's Edith. And the lady next to her is Lorna. And they work particularly in the Mbale area of Uganda. And they set up the charity some 26 years ago, something like that. Very, very small charity. You know, if you go to many churches, you'll hear about Tear Fund, you might hear about Jenga, you might hear about Watusi, you hear about different charities that do massive pieces of work. Now, Uganda Concern is a quite small charity. In fact, it's very small. But the wonderful thing about Uganda Concern is the people there are real, and they are working on a very sort of family-related. You can really see where the input happens. You can see where the effects of change. You can see that this is about communities. You can see how women are encouraged. It's interesting that we're talking here on International Women's Day, because in Uganda, you will see women do most things. I saw lots of men. If men weren't riding motorbikes, they were maybe trying to build something or dig something or scrape something. Not entirely sure what it was, but they were always doing something. But women worked everywhere. Even right down to the young children. If you see young children around and about in Uganda, quite often the girls, first thing in the morning, are walking around with big yellow containers on their head, and they will be going to collect water. And you'll see that they are very, very, very active. So one of the key things that we do with Uganda Concern is that we support a youth conference. And the youth conference that I attended back in January of last year was for 75 teenagers. Well, they're of a teenage age. They were sort of like 13 to 20. It's an unusual sort of age group to get together. And I could imagine it'd be very difficult to do that in this country. Can I have the next slide? Is it the video? Okay, brilliant. So we've had some praise and worship here this morning. Kids in Uganda love to sing and to dance. Now, you've got to picture this. So this is a school classroom, and there is a massive speaker in one corner and a massive speaker in another corner. And if you know anything about music, that shouldn't work. Because somewhere in the middle, there's going to be a feedback ring, and it's going to be really interesting. But have a listen and have a watch and see what you think of this. Now, what you can't see there, at the back of the hall, there's a couple of aging Mzungu, white people, bouncing around on one foot and trying to stay upright, because it's a real challenge. But in this conference, so we had 75 kids, there were 49 girls and 26 boys. And the subject for the conference was exactly that passage, Joshua 1, verse 9, be strong and very courageous. Now, Uganda is partly Muslim and partly Christian. Mbali is 85% Christian, but we see a lot of Muslim mosques being built up. So if you're driving through a little town, you will see church, church, mosque, church, church, mosque. And when I say it like that, you think, well, actually, in Faversham, there are a few churches and no mosque. But if you're in these little townships, you will see quite a lot of churches. They look like big sheds, really, but they get full of people, and the people are very, very passionate. And as I said, we had these 49 girls and 26 boys. And as we started to talk to these young people, we saw that some of the difficulties they were having were things that, I've never encountered before. Some of it sounds like the stuff of James Bond. One of the things I found out, which I was perhaps not prepared for, is that the witch doctor is real. And you think of a witch doctor and the type of things that they might do, and putting people under curse and various things like that, you think that's the stuff of books. It isn't. It's real. And the witch doctors are very, very real, and the curses that they put on some of the young people were quite terrifying. There was one particular young girl who told us that she was fearful for her life because her dad was deemed to be successful. He had a motorbike, he had a house, he had a very beautiful daughter, he had chickens and a goat, and he had a job. That meant he was very, very wealthy in that sort of situation. But she was a very, very attractive young lady, and she was worth quite a bit of money. And so there was people who would wanted to make her an orphan, and the only way they could do that was to kill her dad. And they thought, well, they'd stuff his house full of snakes. Now, that is the stuff of James Bond. You wouldn't think that would happen, but it did. And so we have these examples. So being strong and courageous for these young people who some of them were Christians and some of them were not. And as I said, these were kids between 15 and 20 years of age. Now, 75 teenagers in a room. Emily, tell me what sort of sound that would make. That's a good point. Part two especially. You could hear a pin drop. So what you've got here is 75 teenagers in a room designing, I think it was it calendars we were doing at this point? They were making calendars for the new year. In Faversham, you wouldn't get 75 teenagers to sit and do an art and craft exercise. You certainly wouldn't get them to do it quietly, and you certainly wouldn't get them to do it without fighting over pens or something like that. I've never seen anything like this. In fact, at the time when we were doing this, we just had a visiting policewoman who'd come in to talk to us about law and order in Mbale and various things concerning the law. And she said that she had to go because she had a very important meeting to go to. Until she found out we were doing art and crafts. So the next thing you know, she's sitting down and she's drawing and doing a craft as well. But the wonderful thing about this is that these kids didn't know each other, but they got on as if they were best friends, you know, and they really worked. I don't see arguments or falling out. But we do see some sickness. Now, if we get ill here in town, we're very easy. We've got two big doctors to go to. We've got a minor injury unit, and we can go down the road to Canterbury or to Ashford to go to hospital. We had, I think it was two or three young people that had malaria on day two, and we had to get them down to a local clinic where it cost us 18,000 shillings each for the drugs that they would need for their malaria. That isn't a lot to us. It's about £4, I think it was something like that. But to them, that's a huge amount of money. And in fact, their parents, they probably wouldn't have got the drug. They would have had to sweat it out, and they really would have to sweat it out in terms of malaria. But these kids were fantastic, working together and sharing together. But because of the things they faced in their life, you know, that be strong and courageous was so important, because they've never been told that message before. They never have been told that they have a voice. They've never been told that they can be strong. They've never been told that they can they have rights, and particularly the young girls. We'll talk a lot about the young girls as we go on. Now, these young people here, there's six of them there. They gave their hearts to the Lord on, I think, day three of the conference, and they became Christians. This year, at this year's conference, one lad particular gave his heart to the Lord, and we're very, very prayerful over him because he was a Muslim. And when he goes back into his community, he has to answer questions. Now, I'm really impressed that the Muslim team, they let him come to the conference in the first place, knowing what the conference stood for. So please pray for the work of the Christian conferences that they do for the teenagers. Can we move on? Have the next picture, please. This is a kitchen. Now, ladies, if you're going home to do your Sunday lunch, prepare for Sunday lunch, how would you like to walk into a kitchen like that and cook for 75 people, plus staff, security staff, and Muzungi as well? And these women were absolutely incredible. They just wandered in every morning and every afternoon, and they just made dish after dish of fantastic food, really wonderful food. Ugandan food is largely carbohydrate, so you would expect to find several things on your plate at one time. Posho, which is a white sticky substance, which I wouldn't recommend eating, but you could use for putting on wallpaper to hang up on a wall. There was some rice, obviously rice is there, and then something they called Irish. Any idea what Irish might be? Potatoes, exactly. And so you would have a combination of all these carbohydrate mixes. And they pile their food, the tiny people, so they pile their plates up with this food. And, you know, we would just have a bit because we were going to eat later on. And one person said to me one day, he said, we feast, but you taste, you know, and it's important. The food that they were sharing with us was incredible. Now, as I said to you, that you normally see girls carrying big yellow tanks, but this is an important picture, as Bridget pointed out to me, because I didn't appreciate it at the time. But this was two teenage boys. They're probably away from school. It may have been school holiday, but they were actually working. They were actually doing something. They were carrying these yellow tubs to go and get water. And it's quite an unusual picture to see. And it's, you know, they're all helping in the community, but these boys are working, which is really, really rare. Now, this is a wonderful lady called Sarah. I'm going to ask Bridget just to step up to the microphone and just tell us a little bit about Sarah and the children here.
Hi. Yes, I'm Bridget. Sarah, I met, actually, I've just worked it out. It was 22 years ago. She had been fairly recently diagnosed with AIDS, and her life expectancy was not good. In those days, no antiretroviral drugs, nothing to treat it, except maybe a bit of Septrin. Chest infections. But this woman, I first met her, she was living in a very humble home, as they do, and it was rammed with little children. She'd been widowed, her husband had died of AIDS, she had children of her own, but she had realised that there were more and more orphans around in her own little village. And so the little food she had, she'd make some porridge and try and feed the other orphans as well as her own children in this home. And she just did it in faith. You know, where the food came from, it was God that provided it, really. She was too sick to work. But over time, the local pastor realised what she was trying to do. And to cut a very long story short, there's a project we support in that village. It's now based in the church, called the Sakia Prayer and Porridge Project. And it has about 300 children that come every Saturday morning. And in the school holidays, they come and play almost every day. And they're given Christian teaching, they sing, they dance, they actually play. I know that sounds odd, but the children don't have access much to any sort of play equipment, but they have footballs, netballs, you know, and other sort of what they call scholastic materials, colouring crayons and things. And they just love coming and playing because it's a safe environment where they won't be beaten or shouted at or abducted or whatever else happens to these vulnerable children. So this project just mushroomed and God blessed it. And every year I go back and I think, will Sarah still be alive? And she was. I've met many women, many Sarahs out there, who God has kept alive 25, even 30 years post-diagnosis. And they say it's because God has still got work for them to do. Their faith puts mine, you know, to less than a mustard seed. They just literally, every day, trust the Lord for their own health. She's had all sorts of health issues, but each time God has brought her through. And we happen to call her her home. You can see her lovely smile still. She's actually the same age as me, and her house is still always full of young children. Some might be grandchildren, but they're just, the community knows she's a safe person to go to. And I just think she's a wonderful example of someone who starts with nothing. When we start a project, we think, first of all, where are we going to get the money from? How are we going to do this? God does it the other way around, doesn't he? He starts with a person with a passion. And then, if they're ready to serve him, he can work the miracles. Thank you.
Thanks, Bridget. So prayer and porridge. I'd heard about prayer and porridge, and I wasn't prepared for it. No matter how you could be prepared for it, you couldn't be prepared for it, if that makes any sense at all. So you go to this clearing in the forest, as it were, and there is a church building, and a big sort of playing area. And these kids come out of nowhere. You could see them creeping around trees, and you can see some of them. This little girl here, she stole my heart, because she has got a party dress on. What you can't see is the split across the front and the dirt on the dress. Now, obviously, she was there waiting like everybody else for her porridge, but she just couldn't wait because she was really hungry. We could see that she was hungry. And she was at one moment, she was over there with all the other kids sitting on a rug, and then she saw us as we sat on the side of the field. And, of course, we had a position of honor. We had a table there that's got some small sweet bananas and some soda, and they were put there for us to enjoy while we were listening to the kids do some songs for us. And Pastor, how do you say that word? Mattia, Pastor Mattia, to talk to the kids. And all of a sudden, as they were singing, this little girl danced over to the table, and I thought, here we go. I wonder what's happening. And she danced over, and she very slowly nicked a banana. And then she sat on one of the ladies' laps, Esther's lap, and peeled the banana for her, and she shot off back to the huddle that was on the rug. What was really interesting was that as she went back to the huddle on the rug with a banana, there were probably about 120 kids looking at the banana. And we thought, we've got an interesting situation brewing here. We had 8 bananas. Unless we have a miracle the size of loaves and fishes, not everyone's going to get a banana here. Anyhow, she eats a banana, and then about 2 minutes later, she's back. And she's danced her way back to us again. And she'd got another banana. And one of the girls said, no, she really can't have another one. It's just not fair. And one of the other girls said, look, in fact, it was Lorna, said, just look at her. She's hungry. So she took the banana. And off she went in the middle of that, and she's eating the banana. Do you want the next picture? This is Pastor Mattia, and he is receiving a block of Good News Bibles. They like to use the Good News Bible. It's fantastic for kids. And so we always try and take as many Good News Bibles as we can out to Uganda. So that's an appeal. If you've got Good News Bibles at home and you're not using them because you use other versions or it's spare, please let us know. We'll happily take them. We take some very heavy suitcases over to Uganda because they've got full of Bibles and other things, which we'll tell you about in a second. And here is playtime. Now, if you've got something like 180 kids in front of you and you want to encourage them to play and to have fun, all you need are some bubbles or balloons. It's all you need. And wherever we went, with bubbles or balloons, we had that sort of reaction. Kids were leaping around and having fun. And that pastor, I was talking to him pastor to pastor, as you do sometimes. He was sitting down, having a quiet chat. And so I said to him, so how many people come into your church? He said, it varies. He said, it varies, but never less than 300. Now, his church is tiny. It's a tiny little place. And people are, you know, the sound of the speaking and the songs are all put out through speakers. They've all got these massive, great PA systems all around that area. And the kids sit outside the church quite often just to receive, and they were really greatly blessed. But that pastor wouldn't be doing that if he wasn't strong and very courageous. Most of us would have given up a long time before that. But the Lord has really blessed him in that work. And this year, for the first time, due to some financial support, we've been able to introduce a second prayer and porridge in a different area, which is quite fantastic. Now, the plan for that particular prayer and porridge was to happen on Sunday after church, if I'm right. And they planned for about, 180 kids, something like that? So there we are. So we had a registry of 158 kids, and in fact, we had 296 turn up for prayer and porridge. And they all got prayer and porridge. They all got porridge. And you can see this wonderful picture, and this is them enjoying the porridge. Some of them take banana leaves and use that as a salad type thing to help them take the porridge. Now, we moved into the community and talking to individuals. This is a lovely little girl called Esther. So Esther, when we met her, was 14. When she was 11, she was sent, not asked to go, but sent to go to Kampala. It's about 200 kilometers away from Mbali. And she was to be her brother's maid. And her brother got very, very drunk, and he repeatedly raped her. So Esther now has a small daughter called Elizabeth. And one of the work of the charity, where the charity really gets involved in individual cases and, you know, the community, is that they will look to find a good foster home for Elizabeth and get Esther back to school in a place where she could be close to a daughter. So to her credit, a 14-year-old girl really wants to mother her own daughter, even though it's her brother's daughter. I find that quite amazing, and I'm not sure we'd see that in our society. But she's quite an amazing lady. Here's a guy called Moses at the back, and this is his grandson, Emma. That's right, grandson, Emma. That's an unusual name for a boy. Emmanuel, but they call him Emma, don't they? Bridget, do you want to tell us, because you had an update, you saw him this year, didn't you? Do you want to update on that one?
About 2 or 3 years old when we saw him last January, not this year. And he'd obviously had some mystery virus. They couldn't tell us what it was. I'm not really sure what it was, but it had affected him neurologically. He was basically unable to walk. He'd lost the use of both legs and his arm. And to make matters worse, they'd put in a scalp drip, you know, to when he was extremely sick. And the whole area had become infected, and he had this massive wound on his head, didn't he, Jim? And it was, and that was just open to the elements because you couldn't really dress it. And he was in a pretty poor state. They said he couldn't do anything, couldn't walk. But we prayed for him, didn't we? And then after we'd prayed, we sort of said, well, let's stand him on the floor. And he actually was able to take his weight. It was amazing. But, I mean, he still had a long way to go. So this January, when I went back, I asked Moses how little Emma was, and he brought him to see us. And this little boy, he's still got problems. You know, I won't pretend he's fully healed, but he demonstrated how he could now walk with unaided. He can still take some steps and hold his balance. And the arm that was just hanging, he's now can use, not maybe the finer movements yet, but he was able to move the arm and do something with it. So the Lord is healing him, and his head is all healed up. It's an interesting thing because it won't grow hair anymore, that part of the scalp, and it's not got the brown pigmentation on it, so it does look a bit unusual, but he's getting back to being a healthy little boy and very happy and just in the community. So again, we have a God of healing as well, where I'd look at situations as a Western trained nurse and think, oh, this is hopeless, but God heals where there's prayer.
Thanks, Bridget. And it was really interesting that time, because I remember being in the house with Moses and Emma, and Bridget was massaging the little boy's foot, and she just turned to me and she said, "Pray." And I'm thinking, ah, I've said thousands of prayers in my life. But, woof, to pray like that, you think, well, strong, courageous, you just have to claim God's healing. You claim his majesty over life. You claim those things. And then you see what God does when he opens that door. And all of a sudden, this little chap stands and he smiles. He hadn't been smiling for ages, and he stands and he smiles. And it's just a wonderful thing. This is another one of my favorite families, right in the middle of nowhere. I could not describe to you how you get to this house, because it was way in the middle of down a forest trail. And you might recognize that these people here in the picture, they've all got a faraway gaze. Pretty much everybody in that picture was blind. And it's a condition that they picked up and probably around about when they were 11 or 12, I think. What's particularly interesting, you see the girl at the end in the with the red waistcoat. That's the daughter of the family. She's blind. She got raped as well. It's not uncommon at all in Uganda. There is no respect for females at all. Unfortunately, if tribal men find lone women in a place, rape is very, 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 very common. And we were talking to the family, and this is going to sound a little bit strange, and we said, so which one? They said, she's got a son. So we said, which one's the son? And they said to me, the brown one. Now, I found that a little bit challenging at first, but you can actually see what they mean, because if you look at her on the bench and to count two children in, you'll see that child is of a lighter color than the others, and it was the brown one. And he got really attached to me, and he was hanging onto my leg most of the time that we were there. But again, the women's groups go out into these tiny little villages, tiny little places, and it's women all the time that do this. And if you find what you might call a modern man, a new man in Uganda who's standing up for what's going on, you've found a really fine thing. So one of the challenges that we have with the charity is talking to men, trying to get them to understand the respect that they should pay to women, understand the value that women add to the community and to their lives, and to teach them how to be overall in respect. This is another, who lives in a house like this? You know, you have some great programs about houses on the television. This house was literally falling down, and for want of a better description, I never got to know the name of the father here, the tall guy, but we called him Drunken Father, because basically most of the time he was drunk. You can see the woman at the back with a little child. We called her Little Wife, because this is eight children in this one family living in a tiny little tumble-down house, and really was quite awful. You can see there that's what it looked like. Eight people, in fact nine, in that tiny little cottage. Next one, please. So the charity, one of the most important things they do is look out for the most vulnerable in their communities, and they build a new house. So the men of the village would put up a frame. They would divert a natural course of water, a stream of water, into the local area, and you can see where the mud is. That's a beautiful Esther jumping up and down. Look at that dress she's wearing. She just rolls up a dress and jumps in. And so they put the mud on the walls, and they build this house. And it's fantastic to see the house go up, fantastic to see the walls be built. And you could see that house for quite a distance, because you look down, they put corrugated iron on the roof. And they can tell how big the house is by the number of sheets of corrugated iron they put on the roof. And there was about 24 on that one, so a big house. Now, I'm going to ask Bridget to talk again, because this is a new story. I've not been familiar with this one. I hope you can bear with us for time, really, because it's just probably another 5 or 6 minutes.
This community was way, way, way up in the mountains. It was about 2.5 hours drive from the town. A very active women's group, and they identify the neediest families in their communities. And they came across this family also in a very dilapidated shelter that was leaking. The traditional roofs of banana leaves and grasses, they leak when the heavy rains come. And they found this family with seven children sheltering in one falling down half of a hut. The husband was an alcoholic. Jim hasn't actually mentioned this, but the main thing that the men do in these villages, because they've got little work to do and nothing much to fill their time with, they drink this home brew. I found out over the years you can ferment almost anything from bananas to grains to whatever and make really, really potent alcoholic brew, and they just sit and drink it all day and then go home and do unspeakable things to their family. And this family was just destitute. So the women identified them as someone who needed a new shelter. But sadly, while they were trying to build them a new shelter, the oldest girl in the family had had to move into an unoccupied house of a neighbour next door because there simply wasn't room for her to... They were sleeping on bits of sacking on the floor, that's all they had. And there wasn't room for her to lie anywhere where it was dry. So she slept next door. And of course, the inevitable happened and some nameless gentleman took advantage and she became pregnant. Now, to add sort of punishment to these poor girls, they're often rejected by the family once they're pregnant, no matter how it happened. And the women counseled the mother and said, no, you must care for her. So we were pleased to say that they had accepted the girl back in the family and she is receiving care and her baby's due quite soon, actually. But the family had a new home that the women's group had helped build. Our charity buys, as Jim said, the metal roofing, because really, unless you've got a waterproof house, it's going to decay again. So our money goes towards things like nails, strong wooden lockable doors, and the corrugated iron roofing, which is very expensive for them out there. And so we were taken to see this family. But the amazing thing was that this is practical Christianity. This is God's love in action. Because of how the family had been helped, the mother, first of all, started to come to church. She'd become a Christian. And then the greatest miracle was that the husband also came to church, and he's totally given up drinking alcohol, which is a big thing for a man to do in that community. But he says he's turned his back on it. They're transformed. You know, their whole lives are different. There's a pride in them. And when we went inside, they decorated it with little wild flowers all stuck on the mud wall inside because they were so proud of their new house. And they got all this new hope. It's a new beginning. And, you know, yes, the past has happened, they've suffered, but now they're looking forward. And it's just a good example of how this tiny charity works in such an effective way. New lives. Thank you.
Thanks, Bridget. It's a whistle stop. We've got, I've got thousands of pictures that I could have told you lots of stories. But going back to our text for be strong and courageous, what does it mean? What does it mean to be strong? What does it mean to be courageous? What does it mean to be bold? It just means stepping outside your comfort zone so often. Because when we're challenged, the easy thing is to disappear, to shrink into the background and not to be involved. You know, but when you've got something in front of you, when you've got a challenge, when you've got something to face in your personal life, we've spoken about David and Goliath. Dave spoke about that last week. We all have personal Goliaths. And the only way to tackle a personal Goliath, you know, and something that's big that's in your life, is to be strong and to be courageous and to take it full on. And with God's help, if you know, look at the wonderful story of David and Goliath, five little stones and little pebbles went into the bag. You know, the stones were chosen because they were smooth and they would fly through the air. But he didn't miss with any stones. The only stone he needed was the first one that he took out of the bag. When God looks at us, he sees the first stone. He sees us as those smooth pebbles that can fly. He sees us as those that can actually make a difference in life and difference in community. And if we want to be a smooth stone, if we want to be used by God, the first thing that we have to do is to submit to him. The Bible says in James that if we resist the devil, just as that gentleman there, that young dad there is resisting the drink. If we resist the devil and draw near to God, then he draws near to us. And great things happen. Wonderful things happen. It's great that it's International Women's Day. I just want to show you a very quick video of women going to work in Uganda. Do you know, go to work tomorrow morning, do you feel like that? You know, you might be in your car, you might be driving off, and what you see, we see people getting bad-tempered and angry. There is so much we could have shared, and I particularly wanted to share with you the work of Uganda Concern, just so that we'd encourage your hearts to see what's going on, what God does when we allow him to move, how he makes a difference if we trust him. And that picture sums it up, really. God bless you. If you want to talk to us afterwards about all the things you can do to help and support, obviously we cover your prayer support more than anything else. You can join up to be a friend and you'll receive newsletters. You can find us on our webpage, Uganda Concern UK. Obviously, financial help is really, really welcome. It's a small charity, as we said, and the more that we get, the more we can do. And we've got a full price list, so if you're interested in how much it costs for a mattress or how much it costs for a mosquito net or how much does it cost to build a house, maybe I'll ask that question. How much do you think it would cost to build a house? Let's have an auction. £5,000. Any more? £128. Half a house. In fact, it's about £300 to build a shelter. But it's a huge amount of money to them. And it's the corrugated iron that costs the main things. You put up a wooden frame, you get the mud, every rest is history. Ladies just jump in from everywhere and slap mud all over the place. But it's the corrugated bits. But we've got a full price list. And obviously, the children's conference, they use a lot of pens and papers and books. And we've already mentioned the Good News Bible. Just pray into it. Just be aware that this is a small charity that's really doing a massive piece of work. And we do covet your prayer and support. God bless you.